AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
I was just going to suggest we make a whole podcast about why Nigel Mansell should have been in Mario Kart or at some point.
He should have, especially as it's Mario Kart.
The anime's already going off on one, so there's plenty of potential for this.
No, I think an even better argument is not do you insert Nigel Mansell into Mario Kart, but it's you are allowed to replace all of the drivers bar one on the grid with Muppets. Which one do you keep as a human and the rest have to be Muppets? Like, which driver and season does that play out funniest as? Because I think 2021...
I think you have a bonus part of that and just take the commentators out of it and put those two Muppets that are always up in the rafters commentating on everything as Statler the actual commentators for...
Yeah, Statler and Waldorf. Know your Muppets, Timo.
No, I've grown up since then.
I think it'd be funny to have 2021, all of the drivers are Muppets apart from Max Verstappen. And then it's...
Or Yuki Tsunoda.
What, so he's the same height as the Muppets?
Yeah. You see me?
No, because I think it'd be absolutely hilarious to have, what is it, Sam the Eagle playing Toto Wolf and smashing a pair of headphones into a table. Because that would be funny. And I think...
Keep them all Bon Latifi.
I think there's so many different ways you can play this out, but at the end of the day, I think it's innately funny that of course Max Verstappen is the world champion, he's the only one that's not a Muppet and therefore non-Muppety things fail to befall him. It's sort of like when you had Pierce Brosnan in a Muppet sketch and everything is needed to go Muppety around him. I think it'd be fun to make Max Verstappen the only human and every other driver team principal is a Muppet. I think it's funny if you simply have the 2021 season, everyone's a Muppet apart from Max Verstappen. Because you then somehow got to have Muppet Michael Massey, which as a concept is just innately funny.
To be fair, depending on who you ask, you might not need to change too much on that one.
Exactly. It's bound to sort of do well as a concept. And equally, depending on which side of the Verstappen Hamilton line you stand, it's still a funny concept because either Max only won the championship because he's racing Muppets or it's just kind of funny as Max Verstappen racing
Muppets. Or is the fact that a Muppet was getting that close to beating Max Verstappen?
Yeah. And at some point, you've got to have the Ferrari pit crew, which are all going to be Beaker at trying to do pit stops. You're going,
I just assumed those would be puppets lying on the ground with no hands in them whatsoever because people have just forgotten to actually do anything with them as per Ferrari.
No, it's funny to have the insane lab assistant trying to do a Ferrari pit stop and that's why it goes wrong. You've got to apply the Muppet logic. You can't
You keep the Ferrari mechanics because they're already Muppets.
Yeah, that is the other option. Just sort
I
of...
love how strained your face looked whilst you were figuring out how to say that there, anyway.
It's her thinking face. You just glue felt to the Ferrari mechanics, and there you are, Muppets. I think just the concept of it is funny, and I think it needs honing out, but I definitely think that Max Verstappen as a Muppet, Max Verstappen as a human, everyone else as a Muppet is funny. Because at some point, because every time you have the podium, it's Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton, and insert third Muppet here.
Imagine Shaquille O'Neal standing next
somehow
next
creating
to
the Muppet Shaquille O'Neal standing next to Muppet Lewis Hamilton, Muppet Sergio Perez, and just Max Verstappen.
And somehow still being probably taller than everyone else.
Exactly. You can have fun with the concept of Muppet Shaquille O'Neal and simply just make a pair of legs that are operated from just atop the screen. And that's it. It's just legs moving around. The concept of Muppetizing F1 is funny. And I think McLaren were onto something when they did the Carlos Sainz Lando Norris sort of parting ways thing. They were onto something.
True.
It was proto Formula Muppet. And I think that there is...
Red Bull have also done that too, haven't they? They had puppets with Verstappen and Ricciardo a couple of years back.
I think they did, yeah. Like, there's genuinely grounds to do it, because equally, 2021, you've got Russell crashes into Bottas at Imola.
Yeah.
Imagine that portrayed by Muppets. And which, obviously, I think, as your protagonist, as Hamilton, has to be portrayed by Kermit the Frog.
Who's Miss Piggy?
Christian Horner. Like the
ultimate diva.
It works, right? Like, all the appropriate characters are there. 2021 is just a funny one to do that with, because somehow you've got to express Max Verstappen angrily arriving back at the pits in Jeddah after binning it on that qualifying lap and bumping and seeing his dad and Helmut Marko Muppet. Because how would you portray tension with Muppets?
I don't have the answer. Timo's zoned out.
Timo simply does not care about my Muppet concept.
Really trying to. Not at all.
It's just too perfect. 2021 was the last year we had Kimmy as well, so obviously he's Swedish chef, but just conveniently characterised as Finnish chef, and it's just like the same Muppet as Swedish chef, but slightly different. I think that this is too perfect an idea. It's wasted on you two. Wasted. Anyway, the Italian Grand Prix. Let's play the title music and get the podcast on the road.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host, Ellie Mae Taylor. We're back to preview this weekend's Italian Grand Prix. Joining me as ever are the Mario and Luigi Tamayoshi, Jesse Billington and Thibaut Alves-Daly. How are you both?
Quite excited. I've been thinking very intensely about making Formula Muppet recently. So yeah, if I'm a little sidetracked through this episode, there's your reason why. Formula Muppet, it would probably be the cold open to this.
We just have to find out the reasons why you're sidetracked in every other episode of this podcast, and we'll just put it down to Muppets. I'm very well, thank you. I mean, I'm not distracted at all by whatever the hell he's been smoking. How are you?
I kind of spent the whole day giddy in the fact that I remembered I saw McFly, and then I've been so giddy that I'm now really tired. So I don't know how well this podcast is going to go because I can't stop yawning. But we'll move on to what the hell has happened. And literally just F2 have announced that they're about to unveil their 2024 car.
Yeah, this sort of came out this afternoon. They went 2024 car unveiling, and then also very inconveniently went tomorrow. So we're recording this on Wednesday evening, and obviously Thursday is the first day that press and everyone arrives at Monza, and it's the last round of Formula 3. Formula 2 is there as well, so it's a perfect point to showcase to Formula 3 what some of its drivers might be driving next year, and equally just sort of go, look at that. So, but it's just incredibly annoying for us because we have no clue what they're unveiling. I think Dallara are still making the chassis. No word where the engines are coming from. But yeah, this is a great thing because the current Formula 2 chassis is awfully outdated and doesn't really provide that much of a valuable step up towards Formula 1, especially given the leaps that the major series has made in the past few years. It's been very much the same car since 2018, since it was introduced. So that's almost, it's going to be 6 years old by the time that it's replaced in 2024, essentially. And no word on new engines. I think at the moment we're running the Mechachrome V6s, which are fine, but they have a few reliability issues. But equally next year, the cars will be running 100% sustainable fuel. No word on quite how it's sustainable, where it's coming from, and so on and so forth. I'm going to assume it's coming from P1 fuels, which are currently the main supplier for the World Rally Championships, I believe. So they've obviously got provenance with producing motorsport sustainable fuels. So we'll see where that truly comes from. But overall, this is a step in the right direction for Formula 2, for modernizing it and making it a more relevant step on the sort of ladder we often see Formula 2 drivers coming out of the series into Formula 1 and seeing a bit out of their depth, because there is such a huge gulf in technology and what you're expected to understand coming out of Formula 2 and into Formula 1. So fingers crossed this sort of eliminates a bit of that gulf.
Should we just film different reactions so that if it's amazing, we'd be like, wow, it's amazing, we've seen it. And then if we haven't, or if it's terrible, we'll just be like, why have they done this?
We'll take this two ways. We'll do one to go. So when this releases tomorrow, we should do this sort of Formula 2 has just released their new chassis and wow, it's amazing. Or Formula 2 has just released their new chassis for 2024 and frankly, it looks pants. I don't know why they made it look like a penis. That way we've got two takes that I can cut together in the edit tomorrow. So that works.
Or it'll just be a case of we'll get the office meme of corporate wanting you to find the difference between these two pictures and we can't because they're the same picture.
That is possibly I don't think that's going to be what's happened. That chassis is...
I hope not, because it'd be really awkward if they do all of this announcement and then it's like, oh, it's the same.
What do you do? We changed the shark fin on the back of it. Great.
We've replaced it with Enzo Fittipaldi.
Yeah, we've simply taken his teeth and glued one to the back of each of them. That's the Formula 2 news coming out of this, really. There is some good news
ahead of the Italian Grand Prix, which is kind of nicely timed because a trailer's dropped for the new Michael Mann film, Ferrari. Literally a teaser trailer, very short and sweet, but nice timing, as I say, for this weekend. It comes out in December and is starring Adam Driver, Penelope Cruz. Looks good, I think, from the little bit we've seen. Obviously, Michael Mann knows how to make a film. Biopic focuses on Scuderia as it faces bankruptcy in the wake of Enzo losing his son Dino and embarks on tackling the Mille Miglia. So hopefully it's a bit as well as a kick up the ass for Ferrari in terms of getting that passion going again and they can sort themselves out. Charles has been saying he's looking forward to seeing the car for next year. Fred Vasseur has been on Beyond the Grid saying that hopefully they can do a few things to get back near the front and they're using the last 6 months of this championship to really go for it in 24. So maybe they can have a nice team day out at the cinema all together or probably just have it shown at the factory knowing Ferrari and then it all hopefully comes together. But it's a good trailer. Good film, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Do we know how long a period they're covering over this movie?
I think it is this is going to be sort of 40s, 50s centric by look of things. It is very much that sort of first time that Ferrari goes into the Mille Miglia. So that would have been around 1950 something. Again, I don't know my Mille Miglia history so well, but I think it's about 52, somewhere around that point in time. So we've got some absolutely fantastic replica Ferraris that have been built up for use in the series. Some of the filming that we've seen has been actual sort of replica Ferraris racing through proper locations. There's none of this sort of CG nonsense. It's been filmed very much with an emphasis on practical effects and with a huge mind to the fact that this is going to be watched by car enthusiasts, by Ferrari fans, and by people who appreciate the history of Ferrari. So they've had to make sure they've gotten a lot of this very right indeed. And I think it's sort of almost in the accuracy it's going for when it comes to vehicle dynamics. They've gone very much down the route of Mad Max Fury Road on the grounds of if we can get a car to do it in real life, good. That way it can be on the film. So we're looking at sort of really accurate portrayals of doing the Mille Miglia, which is a challenging race or that ran for 1,000 miles across Italy. It is a big challenge for any automobile to attempt in 1950 because it was done on unpaved roads, unmetalled roads. It was cobbled streets. It was dirt and dust and gravel that were making up these circuits. And it's an important part of most Italian brands and certainly part of Ferrari's history as well. So I'm excited for it. I mentioned it with the trailer dropped while I was in the office and I sort of turned to my editor and went, oh, look, the new trailer's dropped. And he was like, team day out in December then. And it comes out for Christmas. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, because I was trying to think, Enzo passed the mid-50s, and would they have, I don't really know much in relation to Mille Miglia, would they have had the same sort of cars as they did with Le Mans? Because it's still kind of endurance, isn't it? So
I believe it's very similar to that sort of thing. We're looking at like 500 TRs and all that sort of thing. So Dino Ferrari died in 1956. So
I should just point out, Ellie Mae, you said Enzo died in the 50s there. You meant Dino.
Dino died, sorry. It's interesting that they've gone Mille Miglia because I think Le Mans would have also been equally as interesting because apart from 1959, they won from 58 to 65.
Yeah,
I really want to see the Ferrari 250s and 275s.
I mean, obviously, if we're looking into the 50s period, so yeah, 1956, spoiler alert for those of you who are going to watch the film, it's obviously aware history. Ferrari won with Castellotti in 56 with a Ferrari 290 Mille Miglia Spider Scaglietti, and then they won the year after that with a 315S with a Piero Taruffi. So I think it's looking at the build up to it and the pressure of the team because this was the first time that Ferrari would have won at Mille Miglia since I want to say the early 50s. So I think they would have last won around 1953 off the top of my head. So we're looking at like early 250s, 340 Americas, we're looking at some really interesting Ferrari history that's coming to the fore here, including where Ferrari came from. Like, they had the 166 was pretty much their first car, and I think that was built as their first road car, at least, and that was built as a competitor for the Mille Miglia. So a lot of their engineering mouse came from this and was later applied to Le Mans. So it will certainly be interesting to see how this pans out and where they go from there. I mean, since then, the Mille Miglia is still run. It's still run using cars from that period, and it's pretty much dominated these days by Alfa Romeo 6C.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
So they're sort of big 1920s, 30s sports tourers. But that's by the by. We're getting sidetracked from the actual fact of the matter. Film's coming out, looks fantastic. Go watch it when it comes out in December. Other things that are coming soon, and this is very much a teaser of it, is I think it's pronounced Qiddiya. This is the next location we're set to race in Saudi Arabia. It's set to replace Jeddah. Jeddah has always been sort of known for being the temporary street circuit. It looks quite temporary now. They've finished building the pit lane bits. This Qiddiya is where we're supposed to be heading in Saudi Arabia. We're looking at a circuit that is going to be possibly longer than Spa. Early renders and graphics of it show it being, again, very much a night race thing, but a huge sprawling circuit similar to Yas Marina. Hopefully it's going to be a bit more entertaining when it comes to actual racing. But equally, it's going to host the world's largest Six Flags theme park resort, the two other world record settings, roller coasters. There's going to be a large football stadium in there. It's going to be a huge complex that spans out beyond Formula One. And I don't want to go off about Gulf State vanity projects, things like Neon, the Line and all that, and the Hexagon. But it sounds awful. I want to go and find out how awful it is, because it's going to be manufactured entertainment in sort of like a Saudi version of Centre Parks. But yeah, it's interesting to see the development that's coming along with this, and the circuit is the crucial thing, because I think it's been nailed down, the circuit, as to what the layout is at this point, but no word as to what it's going to be like to drive.
Is it still the case that it's 2027 that it's opening, or 2028, something?
I don't know what the date is for it. Graphic for the circuit shows a sort of lazy river going above the circuit on like a glass bit. The details about it are all pretty sketchy. And
I thought you were going to say the track is a lazy river and you just have F1 cars bobbing along.
That would be fantastic. I think someone absolutely sending it up the inside on a rubber ring would be quite funny. But I think it's 2027, 2028 is when we're looking at actually moving into Qiddiya and using the circuit there. I'm morbidly curious about how well it comes off, and we'll see what happens. Obviously, at the moment, when it comes to hauling races in Saudi, we're shuffling things around now that we're at the start of the season. Unfortunately, this now collides with Ramadan going into the next year. So it's something we'll talk about when we sort of look ahead to the 2024 season. But it certainly seems to be a part of the world where Formula One really wants to sort of keep its claws sunk in. And I think they're maybe just going to say yes to whatever monstrosity is put together when it comes to Qiddiya. Give it a Google, have a look at some of the layout bits, and I'm less than convinced. It's got all sorts of sort of manufactured racing-y bits with sort of long straights that lead into sharp braking zones, and then sort of tight twisting bits that open up as they go through. It's mixed, is my general consensus to it, and we'll see what happens.
It's not an old street circuit.
Road circuit if you're in America, or a classic just track in the UK. It's not one of those sort of proper motor racing facilities. And if anything, I've quite grown to like Jeddah, so I don't know why we're now having to get rid of it, because it's actually provided some decent racing in the past two times.
Because it was always temporary.
Yeah, it was always temporary, but We just sort of not take it apart. That sounds like more fun. Anyway, we'll move on to looking at the actual Italian Grand Prix and the proper news relating to it and alternate tyre allocation returns for qualifying.
Yes, this means that a driver's tyre allocation will be reduced to 11 sets rather than their usual 13, the allocation being 4 sets of softs, 4 mediums and 3 sets of hard. During qualifying, teams will have to use the hards in Q1, mediums in Q2 and softs for Q3. This was obviously meant to take place in Imola, which obviously got called off. So it subsequently happened in Canada, but then we had a wet qualifying, didn't we? So it wasn't, we didn't really get to see this new format in full force yet. And I don't know about you guys, but I still back this regardless, and I still want to see it in action. I think it could create a little bit of drama.
Am I misremembering, or did we just talk about tyres for ages, or did this happen at an actual Grand Prix that we've had? Because I feel like we've had a very similar conversation before.
I feel like we had it in Azerbaijan. We were supposed to have it...
No, more recently.
Monza?
Well, we're having that in Monza now, but we haven't done that yet.
Did it happen in Spa? Did they use it for Spa?
We had sprint in Spa, so maybe we had tyre chat in that. I don't know.
I've lost track of the many different ways they're trying to get us to use tyres at the moment, and also somewhat lost interest. I think that Hungary, we had it where you did hards, mediums, softs, because it somehow worked for Alfa Romeo, and we had...
because Joe fucked it up because he did a very Q5, good qualifying, yeah. And then binned it immediately.
Well, he binned it after he had a brake failure in the ECU.
Well, I meant kind of staying in that position high up. He binned that immediately.
Yes.
By not starting.
Again, that wasn't his choice to bin that, and it wasn't something of his doing. That was his car having a...
No, but it's the way to remember it. Don't be getting pedantic. That's
the way to remember it is correctly.
And it was for a sprint, wasn't it? So it's less time.
Hungary wasn't a sprint. No, Hungary was just conventional, I think. Hungary was conventional.
We're going to have to remember things correctly.
Did they do it for Austria as well? Because that was a sprint. I don't think they did.
Nope.
No. Because one of the Austrias was wet anyway. The Austria Saturday was wet. Anyway, the fact is the alternate tyres back, we'll figure out how it goes through the weekend and see if it actually gives us another interest in qualifying. And if it does, whether or not Joe's car is able to start the race conventionally. Speaking of starting races, or certainly starting a Formula One career, rather, Liam Lawson is still in Daniel Ricciardo's place for Monza. Ricciardo's surgery was successful, but obviously it's a bit too soon to put him back in the car.
Yeah, pretty much exactly that. And it's nice to see Lawson getting a second chance to fight for an AlphaTauri seat for next year. So he's got 2 Grand Prix at least now to show that. Don't know quite how soon Ricciardo's coming back, but it is worth noting that AlphaTauri said that Lawson will remain their second driver until Ricciardo does come back. So there won't be yet another driver getting into that second seat. Although now that they've said that, I guess anyone's up for that second seat again to come in at another point if there's potentially a clash with Lawson where he's doing Super Formula. Or you should tell something, knowing all the stuff that's going on with them and drives at the moment. But it's nice to see that at least we're getting an idea of who would be best suited for that team for 2024. And it's just Iwasa, really, who could do some post-season testing maybe in Abu Dhabi that would help settle all of that as much as it can. But it's just essentially, we knew Liam Lawson was probably going to stay there this weekend anyway, and he is.
Yeah, I think the only clash that comes up for Liam Lawson and Super Formula is the final 2 rounds of that, which are back at Suzuka on the 27th through 29th of October, which clashes with the Mexican Grand Prix. So he's basically I don't know whether he's going to prioritise winning his Super Formula Championship, something he can still do despite his sort of troubles at Motegi the other week, or whether he's going to possibly stick around if he's needed at AlphaTauri. It's an interesting thing, but equally this now counts that AlphaTauri have given at least one of their seats an FP1 drive. So they've only got one left to tick off this year, which is kind of fortuitous.
Because Nick De Vries...
Oh yeah, of course. Nick De Vries did his rookie seat in 1 because he hadn't done 2 Grand Prix before he started. So he did that seat, but equally Lawson... And Lawson's gotten into the same chassis though, so they still haven't had someone replace Tsunoda. weirdly. So they still need to get like an Iwasa or someone in to replace Tsunoda because of the weird thing. You've got to replace both drivers. This would be something that they've probably spoken to the FIA about and Formula One and gone, we've had two rookies in, but they've both been in the same seat, weirdly enough, different drivers in between. How does that work? And I think they should be able to get away with that in reality because they have now offered FP1 drives to two different drivers.
Yeah.
I think.
And I can't imagine AlphaTauri wanting to make another seat mold for a different driver. I mean, whoever makes their seat molds must be really busy right now.
Really busy, but also absolutely freaking loaded. sort of going, oh, you want to give Iwasa a go? Send him on in, and that'll be another £5,000, probably. I assume that's how much a seat mold is. So, yeah, that's quite something. Speaking of FP1 drives, though, Felipe Drugovic is set to run for Aston Martin in FP1 against Fernando Alonso.
Yes, I think it's interesting that they've decided to let him drive alongside Fernando Alonso. I think Aston Martin are certainly trying to curtail any comparisons between Drugovic and Stroll here. Do you think we'll still be able to compare their times once Stroll's back in FP2? Or
I think
it makes it more difficult, doesn't it? But
it does, because FP2, you never run the same as you did FP1. FP2, you focus on your long runs, you do a high fuel load, you're more from running the harder tyres. The times are a bit slower anyway. But possibly if FP3 is running similar weather conditions, it'll be a similar time of day. That might be the ones we compare. Obviously, it's not going to be completely perfect. There's still going to be different barometric conditions, which do affect F1 cars, especially at high-speed circuits. So going to take whatever we see with a pinch of salt, I think is worth remembering. But if we're able to see performance relative to Alonso, not necessarily performance relative to each other, that's going to be a good marker. The performance against sort of yourself is not really what you're measured on in F1. The performance is against your teammate. That's your closest competitor. And how both drivers across the weekend perform against Alonso is going to be interesting. And we certainly saw that at the start of this year, remember, during pre-season testing, where we had Drugovic in that seat driving against Alonso pretty competitively. And then we mentioned it a lot in the review episode, which has gone live on Spotify, will go live on YouTube certainly before this episode comes out. Ellie May and I do talk a fair length about the problem of Lance Stroll, and the fact is I think we came to the conclusion you've got to get rid of him to actually get that team to progress forwards, because at the moment he's not performing anywhere close to where he needs to be.
Not going to happen, though.
It is going to happen, because he's going to put his foot down and say, Dad, I'm simply living out your dream. It's going to be like that moment from every straight to VHS Disney film where they go, Dad, this isn't my dream, this is yours. And then he goes off and plays tennis. It's going to be that moment. Yeah. Or, Dad, this is your dream, not mine. My dream is to own horses. That's usually a Disney film thing. So, yeah, we'll see what happens there. But
he has the hair for it, I think.
What,
I
reckon for tennis, you know, or horses?
Horses. I reckon, you know, take off the riding hat and then just sort of swoops a bit. And
that is, yeah, how they measure jockeys, to be fair. They always look at the hair first rather than anything else, and they decide on that factor alone. So it's bang on.
Yeah. He would have good riding hat hair, I think Lance Stroll would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's... I have terrible riding hat hair, because all it does is clamps down this bit, so I sort of have the world's weirdest mullet at that point.
I mean, other things that are going to make absolutely no difference to performance or anything else for that matter. Ferrari are running a special livery with their return to some yellow patches this weekend. And it's also got additional flashes of black, as seen on the Ferrari's 499P hypercar that won the 24 Hours of Le Mans earlier this year. Goes on the helmets, goes on the race suits to get some pretty colours to get all the fans happy. Will it work this weekend and get them back on the top of the podium? No, probably not.
Curse of the special livery. Although Carlos Sainz's retro-styled helmet does look really cool. One, curse of the special livery. Two, the car is pretty atrocious at the moment compared to the competitors.
And three, pit stops.
Yeah, pit stops. At least there's not a huge chance of rain.
You've done it.
Well, no, the forecast seems pretty good, which leads me into the forecast very much itself. Thursday is looking calm, dry and fairly toasty at 26 degrees Celsius, providing plenty of premium conditions for teams to do setup checks and track walks. Friday is warmer still, but sees an increasing chance of rain and cloud coverage. The same can be said about Saturday. So the first halves of the feeder series action could again be dented by precipitation. Sunday, though, is going to be dry and 28 degrees Celsius. So hopefully Ferrari won't forget to bring out the wet weather tyres. Or maybe they'll remember and simply fit them in dry conditions. We'll wait and see what happens there. But that really opens up. Yes. Yeah, but they sort of fit the wet weather tyres because they sort of get hotter a bit more and they smoke a lot more for burnouts and skiddy bits. So there's a logical reason as to why they run on the wet tyres in demonstration bits. It's because they smoke better. But anyway, that's not the point. What we're going to move on to is which on-track battle should we look out for? And I'll do this in my usual way of ascending order through the championship. So we start with the team that has two drivers in 21st and 22nd in a 20-driver championship. It's AlphaTauri. And I don't think there's really much chance for anything interesting to happen here unless they bleed off all the downforce from that car. Although we did mention on the pre-review episode of the Dutch Grand Prix that AlphaTauri's and Toro Rosso's and Minardi's do go well at Monza, especially with rookies in them. So we'll wait and see what.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Happens there. We did sort of like to speculate the idea of a Liam Lawson win. I think that was quite a funny concept. But whether it comes true is yet to be seen. After that, it is off the top of my head, it goes straight to Alfa Romeo, who are again going to be hoping for a competitive weekend. But ultimately, this comes down to making the most out of qualifying and then hoping they've got a car that's fast enough to not be overtaken. Haas will be looking for very much the same sort of thing because, of course, they share a power unit with Alfa Romeo. Although at one point, I think Alfa Romeo managed an on-track overtake against Ferrari. So it's customer team overtaking manufacturer, which wasn't a good look. Ferrari will be hoping that that doesn't happen again, certainly on home soil. After Haas comes Williams, who had a good form off the summer break and equally had a good form coming into it. Whether that's able to continue coming into Monza is a different question, though their car does seem to be a bit of a straight line specialist. So there could be a chance for some more Albon points. They were hoping for a P6 last weekend. They might be able to achieve that this weekend. After them comes Alpine, who had a good haul of points with, obviously, their Pierre Gasly third place in Zandvoort. Whether they're able to sort of carry that forwards is going to be an interesting one. Much like McLaren, straight line speed is not really their advantage on the circuit. McLaren very much hoping that there's going to be a lot of battles going on through the likes of Curva Grande or through the Ascari chicane or Parabolica, where you've got these big high speed corners where the McLaren is very much in its own element, but certainly not in a straight line. Then comes the tricky subject of how is Ferrari going to do at home? The answer, not very well, most likely. The car didn't seem to be particularly adept around Zandvoort, but hopefully the open spaces of Monza give them a bit more to fight with. Mercedes and Aston Martin are going to be fairly closely entwined, both sharing a power unit. It really comes down to who has the most aggressive setup when it comes to aerodynamics. And then at the top of the tree, it's Red Bull. I think they're pretty indomitable at this point, and I think someone's going to be lucky if they're able to beat Max Verstappen this weekend. He might finally break the Monza curse where you win and then you suffer and then you win and then you suffer. So we'll see what happens there. And crucially, what happens with our predictions? Pole position, it's a mixed bag from the three of us. I say mixed, semi-mixed, two-thirds mixed.
You're the one that's mixed and a little bit on something.
I might have had a lot of...
Very well played there, anyway. Very well played.
I had a lot of coffee at work today. Specifically,
doesn't explain it the rest of the time, but do explain your pole prediction.
I think Williams are going to go for a really, really streamlined setup and know that the ground on their car, the floor on their car now generates the downforce. that they need to get through the high speed corners. The slow speed corners are going to be a bit of a problem, but they figured they would probably get to that bridge and cross it when they need to. But in between, it's going to be an absolutely rapid car, especially through one lap. So Albon might do all right here and bag a pole position. You two have gone boring and gone for Max Verstappen. Ultimately, it's going to score you points, but you're not going to have quite as much fun through the weekend.
I don't know. I've seen the rest of my predictions. I'll still have a bit of fun, I think.
This is true. I did look at yours and think that you had simply sort of spun a big wheel with all 20 drivers on it and simply stopped it at several points and gone that, and that.
Well, to be fair, now that Bob Barker is no longer with us, someone has to spin that wheel to see what happens. So I feel like that is my duty in life now.
Our thoughts and prayers to his family. So you've both gone for Max Verstappen with pole. I've gone for Alex Albon. The podium, we've all gone for vastly, vastly different things. The only two drivers to appear regularly are Max Verstappen and Oscar Piastri. Interesting enough. Oh, Sergio Perez. So why? Ellie May, explain yourself.
Max Verstappen wins, Sergio Perez second, Oscar Piastri third. Max Verstappen because of Max Verstappen. Sergio Perez because... if you fail to be second in a Red Bull around Monza, I don't know.
What hope have you got?
That's great for my prediction because they're both going to be disappointed.
And then Oscar Piastri third.
Because Lando Norris can't win at Monza. So when it comes to picking a McLaren driver that finishes ahead of him, it's going to be Oscar in this case, I suppose. Sort of similar to Danny Ric finishing ahead of him at...
Yeah, for the past, both 2022 and 2021, he's been beaten by his McLaren teammate at Monza. So,
yeah.
Did Lando DNF last year then?
At Monza?
Yeah, because Ricciardo did, because we had to carry his car off the side of the track because he won the previous year.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking of 2020 and 2021.
2020, where Sainz podiumed and Norris did not do well. And that, yeah. But the pattern is certainly there to work with. Okay, there's interesting thoughts to yours. Timo, you've put Oscar Piastri in a very different position.
Yeah, I've put him in first because he's a quick boy and he's just had not bad luck, but kind of bad luck with how well he's been doing, but it's not quite realizing the potential there. And if there's going to be a Grand Prix where there's going to be something interesting, please let it be Monza, because if Monza's not interesting, then we really have had a really tricky season to try and enjoy. So Oscar Piastri first, why not? That's going to be, it seems fitting that it'd be the young gun who's going to be a world champion at some point to be the guy to take a win away from Max and to break his, and to stop him from breaking Seb's record. So he's going to win. Hamilton in second somehow, and then Sergio Perez third, but he actually keeps it this time because he doesn't speed in the pit lane.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fair. Interestingly, do you know why Perez was caught speeding in the pit lane?
Because they've still not figured out how to put pit limiters automatically on cars when they come in for them to actually work yet.
No, it's because of the different sizes of wet, intermediate and slick tyres that means that you have to slightly adjust your pit limiter and where it comes in on the RPM in each gear given the size of the wheel, because that affects the actual road speed that's generated. And it was unfortunately not adjusted properly to account for the tyre size that the car was running, so the pit lane speed limiter was set slightly too high, which is quite an interesting fact. I didn't know they had essentially three different pit lane speed limiters, which is...
They should just sort that out. It's so stupid when it happens.
They should, but equally, the onus should be on the driver to be in control of their vehicle at all times. All of a sudden, if you start automating
I'm saying them in general, drivers, teams, it shouldn't be a problem in the first place. The fact that it keeps happening, you can still speed in the pit lane when you're not meant to be able to.
Yeah.
It's still silly.
But then you slowly edge towards the concept of Formula Tesla, which is just everything's automated. You just put a person in the car, which isn't quite as fun as Formula 1.
Oh, no, because
one,
you stop there. End of story. But, why is Alex Albon winning a race against Max Verstappen? Because I'm bored now. Go on.
One, you can't just simply stop with technology. It's very much Pandora's box.
Yes, I can.
To evolve. And two, Hammer. Alex Albon is winning against Max Verstappen because the speed of that Williams, it sort of tallies up with my pole position.
Against Red Bull, Max Verstappen in a race. Pole position's one thing, a race is quite another.
If it happens... If this comes true, you'll be thanking me for predicting an interesting race and manifesting.
I don't think I'll be thanking you for it. I'll be again questioning who's supplying your drugs and how you're getting with such things that just shouldn't be on the market.
Look, PCP is a magical tool.
Have you gone back to the Mario Kart theme in the Alex Albon's car?
Yeah, they're just going
to
keep blue shelling Max Verstappen until he just can't be in first anymore.
Yeah, there's a combination of bullet bills, magic stars, mushrooms, magic mushrooms, and blue shells. Yeah, all those sort of things. I've now got the... when you get like the power-up star music running through the back of my head. Carlos Sainz, third place, that rounds out my podium. Albon, Verstappen, Sainz in that order, first, second, third. Fastest lap, we'll stick with Carlos Sainz. Timo, that's your choice. You're still sticking with him until
still
it happens.
Carlos Sainz.
Ellie May, Fernando Alonso.
Yeah, why not?
Fair play.
Perfect reasoning. And I'm very much sticking with the Alexander Albon hype train here. At this point, too far gone to do anything about it. Wild predictions. Timo, you got yours last week, actually. I was very impressed.
What was mine last week? I don't even remember making it.
Yours last week was written into the spreadsheet as over 40 plus overtakes, and we got 186.
Fuck me.
We got over...
I genuinely didn't think we'd get over 40.
You really didn't think we'd get over 40. In fact, I have the fun fact, which was we had over... Where's the note? 63 overtakes in lap three alone.
Interesting.
So if the race had stopped
tapped
then...
Tapped into my weird power again.
Yeah, if the race had stopped then, you'd have still won that point. So are you going to continue
I'm kind of keeping
that?
This with what my podium prediction is that helps this as well, but... I'm still covering myself off even if Piastri doesn't win here. So this will be the first Grand Prix of 2023 where a Red Bull doesn't win. And to be honest, as much as I'd love it to be Piastri, I'm really not fussed who it is, as long as it happens.
As long as it's not Verstappen or Perez?
Well, as they're in Red Bull, yes.
Okay.
Stands to reason.
Different driver in a Red Bull.
Ooh.
Well, then we've had a wild weekend. But, you know, we'll just accept it for as it is.
Yeah, could we have Lawson bumped up or Sonoda bumped up and all of a sudden Iwasa's got to run
I think
F2
we stick Iwasa in the Red Bull.
Just for why not? Yeah. But that'd be the first time since probably like the 60s or 70s since someone's running F1 and F2 in the same weekend. Like I know Jim Clark used to do that. He used to do F1 and F2 at the same time. So it'd be impressive if they do that. Ellie May, your wild prediction?
George Russell outscores both McLarens.
Antipathy into
this is the combined points, is it? Or
I mean that he finishes the race higher in a higher
than both of them.
Than the other two drivers.
Okay.
Not cumulative score.
No.
McLaren simply finishes ahead.
I thought
both
she was
McLarens.
Being ballsy with that one.
I was gonna say you're relying on sort of like a 1 and a 2 pointer for McLaren to at least hope that Russell's ahead of that sort of thing. Otherwise, it quickly adds up. I, meanwhile, have kept with my completely mad thought process of Logan Sargeant top 8.
I mean, it's not that wild when you think about it.
No.
Yeah, Alex Albon's winning it.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think that's the most believable bit of all of his predictions so far, which the irony being it's in the wild prediction section.
You don't think Carlos Sainz could get third place at the Italian Grand Prix?
Not with how they're going this year, mate. No.
Okay.
I mean, the fact that you put Carlos there and not Charles is the funny bit there.
Yeah, that was the other part. I was like, Charles' bad luck's going to carry on. It's going to chase him into Monza. And Sainz is going to finally be the other Ferrari driver that's got onto the podium. Because at the moment, it's not looking great for Sainz and... Stroll, because they're the only drivers whose teammate they're the drivers who've had teammates podium and they haven't yet. When you look at all the other teams where they've had one driver on, they've also had the other driver on. Both Alpines have podiumed, both Red Bulls have podiumed, both Mercedes drivers have podiumed, but only Charles and Fernando have podiumed, not Sainz and Stroll, which is interesting.
Yes, because is Sainz still in the top?
Oh, both Alpines have podiumed as well.
Yeah, both Alpines are podiumed as well. Yeah, it's easy to forget that one, weirdly. Is Sainz still in the
They're
top?
A forgettable team.
Because for ages, it was that he was the only driver in the top five, wasn't it, that scored a podium yet?
Well, Sainz is still in the top five. He came up into the top five off the back of the Dutch Grand Prix. And again, yeah, still no podium. Hamilton ahead of him, Alonso ahead of them, Perez ahead of them, and Verstappen ahead of him all have podiums. Sainz is the highest placed driver with no podiums. Behind him, he's then got Leclerc, Russell, Norris, All of them have podiums, and then it's Stroll as the next driver with no podiums. So interesting there. And then obviously behind Stroll, Gasly and Ocon, who both have podiums.
The positive spin on it for Sainz is that consistency is key.
It does seem to be panning out that way for the boy. He's just slowly bagging these points and coming home ahead of Charles, and it's working. So that's what we think of the Italian Grand Prix that is yet to come this weekend. Any final thoughts before we wrap up this week, this podcast?
Please let this be an interesting Grand Prix.
It feels like at that point we should
more
really
of just a plea, it. Really. Yeah. It's not more of a thought. It's just a plea.
It feels like your plea there should have really led into the theme tune from was it the Magic School Bus, wasn't it, with Mrs. Frizzle? Please let this be a normal field trip, and then it goes into it.
Yes, we're not in your mind, so we're not going to make those kind of leaps and bounds.
But bear in mind that my brain is a vesicle of all sorts of weird knowledge, hence the reason why I immediately went, the Magic School Bus. Surely we could have a reference.
Ellie May, any final thoughts? I'm just going to cut right across whatever the hell he's going on about now.
After that, no.
Timo, any final thoughts? Apart from please,
no, I had mine already.
Trip. Yep. Okay. I probably don't deserve any more thoughts. That's all we have time for on this week's episode. So join us again soon when we'll be reviewing the Italian Grand Prix as well as the feeder series action from across the weekend, plus catching up on F2 from the Dutch Grand Prix weekend, which was kind of interesting, kind of not. And also make sure you've liked, subscribed, and got notifications turned on for all of our platforms, Spotify, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, because we will have content appearing on all of them in the days to come. Timo, where can the people find you?
You can find me over on Is It Fast, On The Curbs, the Nitro RX podcast, Paddock Sorority, and of course, Instagram. Lots of new stuff, lots of lovely stuff there each and every week. Go and check it out.
Wonderful. Ellie May, where can the people find you?
You can find me doing the graphics for our Instagram page, or running our TikTok account, or I will be at Concours trying to get myself in another car.
At least it's static, so you won't get in it and then promptly break it like you did for that poor, poor Arrows at Silverstone.
Firstly, it's an Arrows, so it was already broken.
They do all right on the classic racing scene. Leave them be.
They had, like, what, 7 podiums over their course of, like, 350 races?
This is historic racing. It's a different bag of kittens.
He was also the last person. I mean, I'm still very grateful that I was in the Arrows, but I'm standing by I didn't break it. And also, I was offered to sit in the...
She's stressing that because if she breaks it, she bought it. And she can't afford that right now.
To be fair, you could probably pick one of those up for a few grand. They're pretty easy to get hold of.
I was talking to them. There was they were selling, not they, but whoever they...
The preparer, the team.
Preparing the car for. The guy is also selling... his McLaren for $2.5 million.
Ooh, what McLaren though?
I don't know. We didn't get that far in the conversation before they then started being like, so what car's this? What engine's in this car? Because you're a woman, you must know everything. To be, yeah.
3 litre Cosworth 4 valve, obviously. That's what this series is built for. Anyway, you can hear more about our antics at the Silverstone Festival on the previous episode to this. It's sort of the first 15 minutes is us chatting about all the wild things we got up to there. And if you want more of me for whatever reason, A, I'm sorry, and B, you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter as at Jesse on Cars, as well as on YouTube. And you can also find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. There's plenty of interesting bits in there. By the time this comes out, you'll be able to pick up the latest issue, actually, which will have some of my pictures in it from the Silverstone Festival. I think Italian Grand Prix, Silverstone Festival. I'm very tired. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist. And GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.